Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
This program was made possible by viewers like you. Thank you.
At IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.
The bicyclists are back, and Hero Street's latest story in the cities. The legendary story of Hero Street in Silvis, a story of sacrifice involving the families who lived in this one neighborhood, is being documented once again. We'll talk to the award-winning director behind the latest chapter in just a moment. But first, getting ready for the races. The 58th running of the Quad Cities Criterium just days away. The third of a trio of Memorial Day weekend races that starts at Burlington's Snake Alley, weeds over to Muscatine's Weed Park, and then ends in the village of East Davenport. But it's just one of the big events sponsored by the Quad Cities Bicycle Club in the weeks ahead. And John Harrington from the club joins us with more. This year marks 11 years in the village of East Davenport. I mean, this is a home that you're really, you feel welcomed, and it's welcoming.
From day one, we felt welcomed. So we actually met with the village organization. They welcomed us to the area. And then our race director, Tom Schuler, went door to door, both businesses and residential, to say, hey, I'm Tom. We've got a race coming to your town. We hope that you'll support it. And to a person, all have welcomed us.
The Criterium is such a signature event for the Quad Cities, and in some ways really does help kick off the summer season.
It does, and we're actually the fourth race of the weekend. So there's two races in Burlington. One is a super flat one, Friday night, called Friday Night Lights. And then there's the...
Less than flat one is the next one.
Is the next one, and world famous, really, Snake Alley. And then on Sunday is the Muscatine race at Weed Park. It's hilly too. And so ours is the final of the weekend, and it too is hilly. So a great race for Criterium racers and fans.
I wanted to double check. It is the, how many years for the Criterium now?
We're is on 58.
58,
it's
okay.
It's our 58th, and we are the second oldest race in the United States.
Well, and the Muscatine race is like 40 some years as well. I mean, we're talking about some real history with these bicycle races.
No question. And with our race director, Tom Schuler, he actually coordinates the four races. He gets all the race directors together. So we figured out what days we're going to have them, what times the events are going to be, have the same categories for prize list. And one change that he made a few years ago didn't get a lot of attention, and that was making equal prizes for men and women pros.
That's just within the last 5 years.
That's within the last 5 years,
yeah.
Exactly right, and it's not common. So a lot of races are still big pots for the men, smaller pots for the women, but he made it equal.
I remember when that was announced and when that was implemented, and it was a big deal, and it really is the way it should be.
It is, and so we... As a result, we've attracted more women, which is great. And coming back this year is Petta Mullins. So she's a 12-time Australian national champion, and she won our race a couple of years ago. She came in second last year. A wonderful person. And I'm going to talk about host housing now, because this is a real draw to the race. So my wife runs the host housing program. And it's similar to what John Deere Classic does, where people say, hey, my house is open, I'm willing to put up a team or a single racer, that kind of thing. And so we've probably got, I'd say, 14 host houses this year. And Petta has stayed at a good friend of ours' house, and we've gotten the chance to be friends with her, and she'll be part of this year's race too.
What is the draw for Criterium? Because you think of it as just being local and regional bicyclists. It's more than that.
It's more. We get teams from Colorado and California, and then from the East Coast, and then we've got some international ones. One of the draws that we had last year was the national championship races that are held every year in the United States weren't held on Memorial Day. They were held the week before. And so we had some national champs show up at our races. And you can tell because for 1 year, they're allowed to wear a jersey with the stars and stripes. So we had two men and one woman that were crowned national champs the week before.
What do you like about the race route at the Village of East Davenport? Because we were talking earlier that so many years it was in Belgian Village area, which is relatively flat, mm-hmm. that the race
yes.
course was.
Yeah.
Rock Island District is very flat.
Very flat.
And now you're in an area that even Bix runners would recognize in some ways.
Yes, and the one thing that we like about it is that the course is fan friendly. By having the hill in it, you've got a slower portion of the course. And so fans get the chance to be along the course, and especially at the very top, where the racers are grinding their way to the very top. So you get to see them working really hard as opposed to just flashing by on the corners. So it's a different appreciation for the fans.
And you have different types of races throughout the day. Not only is it men and women, age groups as well, and different styles of biking.
Yeah, two that come to mind. One is the Kohler Electric Kids Race.
Right.
So you say, well, it's not competitive. Oh, no. Those kids are just hyper competitive. They cannot wait. And so we've got a 3-year-old one and a 4- and 5-year-old one and that kind of thing. And then mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, those are the loudest cheers during the whole day where the parents are cheering on their kids. Another race that we've added is we've brought a running race to the event. And so it's the Running Wild Mile, and they actually do a mile, so it's like a lap and a quarter or something like that. The winning time last year was like 4:20. Right.
So they're cruising.
Yeah, so there's some really good runners
right.
that come out on the course as well. So a lot of fun.
What do you like about the tradition of the Criterium?
That it's a tradition. So I'll give you an example. So a prior race director gave me a 8-foot-wide photograph, 2-foot-tall. I says, do you want this? I said, I'd love to have it. And it was one of the corners when it was in the village across the river. And so I put it in my office, and I can't tell you how many people have come into my office and said, oh, I sat on that corner, or I raced that day. And then they'll tell me about what happened. And just to add a little bit more about history, our current race director won there twice in the 80s.
It's really become, because we're talking about bicycling as a race, but bicycling in the Quad Cities has grown, because you're a member of the Quad Cities Bicycle Club. And there are so many different activities that the club does. In order, you have women's rides, you schedule rides throughout Scott County. The organization has really helped grow bicycling in the area.
It has, and so I think we have about 200 rides throughout the year. So these are volunteers that lead the rides, plot out the route, and they're for all
abilities. Yeah.
You know, whether you're an A and a B rider, which you're riding 20 miles an hour, or you're a leisure rider and you're just out there going 10 or 11 miles an hour. On some of the rides now, we have riders with their e-bikes,
mm-hmm.
and so we welcome those. Give you another example, the tour of Mississippi River Valley.
Which we do want to talk about, yes.
Right. We're holding it this year, first week in June, and this will be our first year where we welcome e-bike riders. And whether they're pedaling and getting assistance or it's a total e-bike, we welcome them because they're riders as well.
The tour of the Mississippi Valley, it is the 46th annual tour. I think some people don't even know it exists.
True. We were off the map for a couple of years because the team that ran it had run it too long. They retired. We thanked them for their service, and it took a while to find a new ride director, to be honest. So we're back at it again this year, and it'll go up to Dubuque again. We'll have dinner in the world-famous beer garden at Loris, and then come on back the next day. Total of 108 miles going up, about 90 miles coming back.
How many people take part in that? And let's be honest, that becomes a great a bonding experience. I was going to say a great fraternity, but it's men and women, of course. But it becomes this bonding event.
It is a bonding event, and I've got friends to this day where we met each other on Tom Roth, and the bonding comes from suffering together, going up the hills into Dubuque,
sure.
And then the next day going up the same hills coming home, sore from the day before. So yes, it is a bonding experience.
Don't you say, I'll never do this again, and then the next year you do it?
No, I've never said that again. You just have to put it out of your mind and keep pedaling.
The key also is weather, of course, and that really does impact who takes part. But tell me about the registration and how you get involved in that.
Yeah, so registration, just go to the Quad Cities Bicycle Club website, qcbc.org, and it'll lead you right to Tom Roth. And one of the great things about Tom Roth is, one, it's a well-plotted out route over quiet roads, so you know you're going to be safer than just going on your normal roads. And two, there are 10 rest stops, so 6 the first day, 4 the second day. And at those rest stops, you get great food, friendly people, fill up your water bottle with Gatorade and whatnot. And we typically have them on the side of the road where there are shady trees. So you can actually, on a really hot day, just sit there, relax, be there with your friends, and then goad each other on to get back on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, you do need that. I want to talk one last area is safety. I know the Quad Cities Bicycle Club was very active and very supportive of the hands-free legislation that requires that you don't look at your phone device while driving. It's a bicycle club, of course, is very concerned about that. You're happy with the legislation, and how important is that?
Yeah, very happy with the legislation. I'll tell you a personal story. So last year, a little known crosswalk protection bill was signed, and a few of us helped get that across. And my wife and I got invited to the signing to be there with Governor Reynolds to sign it. And it basically gave protection for riders, runners crossing the crosswalk, because in the actual legislation it only referred to walkers. So they had to just tweak it and put in a few more words. So my wife and I attended the signing. We were standing next to Governor Reynolds. She turned to us, gave us some pens, and I said, I hope we see you here next year to sign hands-free. And she said, I don't know why that hasn't been passed. When I was a senator, I tried to get it passed. I couldn't get it passed. And so here we are. It got signed. And all of us riders have had experience where somebody's texting or they're busy on their phone and we've been buzzed or we've been hit or almost hit. So I'm thrilled that it'll go into effect on July 1st.
Are the streets, are the roads becoming more friendly for bicyclists?
No. In Bettendorf, where I live, I used to ride on the roads all the time, and I don't any longer. I use the bike path or I ride gravel roads. And the reason is that, one, you've got distracted driving, and two, you've got population growth, so there's more traffic. So we've had to migrate onto bike paths. In Davenport and in Bettendorf, bike paths are great, so we can do that. But we've had to do that just for those reasons.
Because I think of, you've seen that they've painted more lines.
Yeah.
They make it very clear that this is a bike lane. Has that helped?
Oh, for sure it's helped. But even still, there's just distracted drivers that they don't see you, or they're doing their own thing, whatever. So
we've also talked about the fact that the Quad Cities is so centrally located. East-west routes, now more development of north-south routes, these more national or regional bike rides throughout the area. We've seen that grow greatly over the last few years?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been on rides where I've seen people with all their packs on their bike, and you know that they're going cross country. And they're on what's called the Mississippi River Trail, and that's part of the nationwide trail going across the United States. And so I've stopped and talked with those folks, and they say, we really enjoy this area because the trail is here, we're safe on it, and the scenery is just beautiful. And then you've got Iowa Nice as well, where they get invited into people's homes for a night or grab a shower or whatever.
Because bicycling used to be just something that some people did. It really has, I mean, let's be honest, bicycling was huge when you're a kid, and then when you grow older, it becomes less so, and then somehow it gets revived.
It does, and you know, we don't have a Lance Armstrong out there getting people out there, but I've noticed the bike paths getting busier and busier. And two things. One, I see more families out there, which is fantastic. People are off the couch, they're out there being with each other. And another thing that's attracted people is the new I-74 bridge. I can't tell you how many families I see, and I mean multi-generational, you know, grandma, mom, and kids out there walking to the center of the bridge to see it, and how many riders there are now that will do a loop in Iowa and Illinois using the Arsenal Bridge or Centennial.
Yeah, build it or facilitate it, and they shall come in so many different ways.
Well, and I'll give you another example. So the I-80 bridge is going to be replaced at some point. And there was a survey that was put out that asked what amenity, or what do you think of this, and then what amenity should be added. So we put out the word to our club members and said, this is a chance to get another bike path on it, just like the I-74. And so a lot of us voted for that. It turns out that the design will include that. And so a friend of mine was at a meeting with Iowa DOT engineers and said, this is fantastic that this bike lane is being added. How did you guys decide? And he said, because you voted for it. And so that has really lit a fire with our membership, especially since the Centennial Bridge is going to be replaced at some point. There's already discussion between Iowa and Illinois to do that. So we're going to get our votes in again to get that bike path on it as well, which is such a family-friendly amenity for the city.
Our thanks to John Harrington of the Quad Cities Bicycle Club. Registration for the Quad Cities Criterium is open right now, and you can also register on the day of the races by heading to the Village Theater in the Village of East Davenport. Hero Street is an historic gem in the cities. It received its name in 1968 to honor 57 servicemen from 33 families who served the country from World War II to the Vietnam War. Six died in the World War, two died in Korea. Fourth Wall Films has done a series of Hero Street documentaries, and all four of them will be re-airing during a special day-long broadcast on WQPT. It's set for Sunday, May 25th. And we're joined by Emmy Award-winning Fourth Wall documentary director Kelly Rundell, who is also working on the latest chapter of the Hero Street story. You have been working and studying and telling the story of Hero Street for years. Why is it such a draw to you?
Yeah, we started attempting to tell the story in 2012. We went to Hero Street and filmed Memorial Day observances. But I didn't, you know, although I grew up here, went to United Township High School, went to school with kids who were related to the heroes, I never heard about the Hero Street story. We left the community here, the Quad Cities, and were gone for almost 25 years before we returned. And that's when I heard about it. And the story, of course, is a terrific local Quad City story, Illinois history story, but it's also a really terrific American history story. So we're always looking for stories that have a local or regional following, but deserve wider recognition and a wider audience. And this story is that. It's about eight men, of course, and we tell their personal stories, but those eight men represent others, many thousands of others who served.
It's also a story of heritage, because Hero Street is in a neighborhood that was densely Hispanic. It almost not by accident either. That was, tell me about that, because the thing about Hero Street, when I think about Hero Street, I think of Hispanic men who were entering World War II and served the country at a time when you may not have given Hispanic people any credit.
Yes, it's an American immigration story. I mean, in so many ways. The parents of most of the heroes were, of course, in Mexico. They were caught in the vice of the Mexican Revolution, and they came here because there was a manpower shortage. And so the U.S. government sent trains down to Mexico to bring workers back. And so they were kind of filling those jobs while American men were fighting during World War I. And then around the time of the Great Depression, people were saying, well, those folks are living in these boxcar communities in the rail yard, and they're not paying taxes, so we need to get them out of there. So they set aside in Silvis a street that was a former dump site, on that second street in Silvis, Illinois. And then the families moved there. Some of them moved their boxcars there and built homes. Even now, you could go to Hero Street. If you could peel back some of that siding, you would find under four or five of those homes, you'd find those boxcars.
You have told now four Hero Street stories.
Correct.
Tell me about that. I mean, because you would think for a documentarian that you do one story and that's it. But you are known for making series and updates.
Yeah, on this particular story, we struggled with funding. We've struggled with funding for this project more than any other subject we've tried. And we had the good fortune of getting a call. Well, initially we thought we'd do a feature length and tell the story of all eight. Could not fund that. And so it was just a chance phone call from WQPT. And the Illinois Arts Council had offered a grant and for a visually creative documentary. And at the time, they didn't have an idea, but they knew about the Hero Street thing. They knew it wouldn't tell the whole story. But Laura Adams said, well, what could we tell some part of the story? And I had just reviewed, or Tammy and I had just reviewed letters from the Sandoval family. Dozens of letters. And so we remembered, we were thinking about those letters and how interesting they are to
all
look at.
All kept during the World War II era.
Yeah, there was a duffel bag full of these letters.
What a treasure trove.
So visually interesting, nobody writes letters anymore. The stamps are interesting, they're on base stationery, very colorful, interesting, beautiful handwriting, and a very personal telling of one soldier's story. So we settled on Frank Sandoval because we had a full set of letters from the time he was inducted until just a month before he was killed in combat. So we were able to tell his story basically through his own words, his own letters home.
Hard to make anything less powerful than that.
No, it really was. And then it kind of opened the door to the notion of telling this as a series of stories. Each film would tell an ordinary soldier's personal story, but also tell the audience something new about what Hero Street is all about, provide the context for that hero story, the war story, you know, behind all of that, and then talk a little bit about the legacy, because there is very much a legacy of service coming out of that little street, somewhere between 100 and 200 service members over the years who have family ties to a block and a half long street in Silvis.
And you're working on a fifth Hero Street documentary?
We are. That will be premiering at the Putnam Giant Screen in November, around Veterans Day.
Veterans Day, yes.
Yeah. And that'll be the story of John Munoz. And that gets us into the Korean War part of it, because two of the heroes served during the Korean War.
How important is it for you to tell these stories? Because they are people stories. A lot of people are calling Hero Street, obviously, heroes. I mean, the word is there.
Well, you know, you get excited about something you think is a great story, and you just want to tell that story. But there's a kind of a responsibility or a feeling of you really want to do the best you can, because you're, in a way, speaking for someone who's no longer here. Almost every story.
Responsibility.
Yeah, almost every story we tell is that way. And if I find myself sort of whining about how difficult it is to make these Hero Street films, I remind myself how difficult it was for these young men to go and to serve, many of them, if not all of them, in very difficult conditions. So I remind myself that I'm helping to tell their story, a story that they're not able to tell because they didn't make it home.
You have told a lot of interesting stories, and I do want to point out that you're going to be at the Quad City Botanical Center June 12th for the Amish incident, Wisconsin versus Yoder, which is actually one of two yes. Amish-themed documentaries yes. That you've done.
Yeah, it ended up being a two-part thing, Amish incident. There's an Iowa Amish incident that occurred in 1965. There was a famous photo that was carried around the world on the wire services of
dramatic.
Of Amish children running into a cornfield to escape from local school officials who were going to force bus them to town schools. Well, Iowa resolved their situation at the state level, and some of the people who were involved in that incident relocated to New Glarus to kind of escape, you know, the controversy.
Which is in Wisconsin, near Madison.
And then in New Glarus, we had a second Amish incident. So that involved trying to compel students to attend school after eighth grade. And that eventually ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court. So the U.S. Supreme Court case finding plus the compromise that happened in the state of Iowa really developed the policy for how Amish folks are, how states work with them throughout the whole country.
And it's all based on that one photograph, which, as you said, incredibly powerful photograph. Yeah. Just have a few moments left. I know you're working on a story that we were talking about earlier because it's so interesting to me, is the Peshtigo Fire, right. which was in northeastern Wisconsin. For those who know, it's just a little bit west of Green Bay area. It is an unknown fire to so many people, but it was so devastating. And why is it that people don't know about this?
I think it's because the Great Chicago Fire, which was very famous and was deadly, drew all of the attention. And it did so at the time because Wisconsin officials were on their way to help the people suffering in Chicago, unaware that they had a much larger, much deadlier fire of their own in Peshtigo, which was a logging community. You had a perfect storm of drought and fire present, and 1.2 million acres burned, somewhere between 1,500 and 2,500 people killed. Still the deadliest wildfire in recorded history.
And nobody knows about it. Almost nobody. Your documentary comes out. And I just find it so fascinating because of the irony that it happened exactly at the same time as the Great Chicago Fire.
Same day, yep.
Our thanks to Kelly Rundle of Fourth Wall Films. Once again, WQPT will air the four Hero Street documentaries on Memorial Day weekend, and you can watch them Sunday, May 25th, right here on WQPT Public Television. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.
IHMVCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHMVCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years. This program was made possible by viewers like you. Thank you.